Full Service Radio is proudly supported and hosted by Simplecast, the easiest way for a podcast creator to publish and distribute audio on the internet. For more information, visit simplecast.com.
Full Service Radio.
Welcome to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We are live from the Line Hotel. I'm Violeta Edelman, your host, and I'm here with Rob.
Rob Duncan, co-host, co-owner, Dolcezza Gelato.
We make gelato in Washington, D.C., and we're here today with Aaron Houston, marijuana lobbyist and policy expert. 30 states and the District of Columbia currently have laws broadly legalizing marijuana in some form. Of those, 38, including, and the district, I'm sorry, have adopted the most expansive laws, which involve recreational use. Cannabis is the number one cash crop in the country. Retail sales of medical and recreational cannabis in the United States are expected to hit $8 to $10 billion this year. So, Aaron, you've dedicated your whole life to advance the legalization of marijuana. So on one side, you see the results. You know, the last decade it has seen tremendous progress. On the other hand, we have now an administration that basically opposes everything that Obama did, and we have an attorney general who fiercely opposes legalization efforts. In fact, he said that he liked the KKK, but when he found out that they smoke pot, he didn't like them anymore.
Yeah, that was a special one. I got a few session stories for you.
Okay, yeah. I want to hear those.
We want dirt.
So I know you're not loving right now, but what the hell do we do, you know, with this, you know, an administration that is not going to pass any legislation advancing the legalization?
It's a great question. I mean, I think this is a question that applies across the board right now, not just to marijuana, but to many other issues. I believe it was yesterday or the day before, the Republican-controlled committee, Appropriations Committee, in charge of giving funds to D.C. or appropriating funds to D.C., blocked our local laws around recreational marijuana. And this is something that they've done year after year after year, and so I've been intimately involved in first unblocking the medical amendment, which we were successful in doing in 2009, but then also working to undo the prohibition on recreational commercialization regulation. You know, we see the Republican-controlled Congress messing with our laws on marijuana. We've got a law on, I'll just say, since we are in Washington, D.C., we've got a death with dignity law, which is wonderful. But it is being blocked, unfortunately. There are choice measures that are being blocked. So, I mean, you certainly, you know, hit the nail on the head, Violeta. Like, that's, you know, nothing is passing right now. I think the question, you know, at the moment is, what kind of regulation changes can we get? What kind of regulatory changes through agencies are possible? There is some movement there, potentially. I still talk to people on the White House staff, believe it or not. I mean, it's, you know, the thing is, the left hand doesn't know what the right hand is doing there. So the catch about working within the regulatory framework is that, you know, the boss might undo it the next day. And we saw something like this recently. We saw some, you know, fluctuation in the messaging recently around marijuana, actually, where Trump, you know, made a concession, said that they were going to, Senator Gardner said, you know, announced that there was going to be some movement. I am not holding my breath for that movement.
Right.
But that's what he said had input from Trump saying, he confirming
said,
that
yes,
as well.
Yeah. Robbie said that, he actually said that they have a deal, that, you know, Gardner is going to move some legislation sometime soon. And that Trump was saying, and this is what I've heard from people in the White House, that they are uncomfortable with the deal. They did not like the deal, and Trump didn't like it. They had to give up ground for it, essentially. They weren't thrilled about it. Again, you know, as you said, like, nothing nothing is moving. So nothing any, moving. Yeah,
at least nothing is moving in DC or at the federal level.
At the
right?
federal level,
and it's states are continuing just to write it and implement it and roll it out.
That's
as
right.
They have since '96 and Prop 215 in California.
That's exactly right. Yeah.
Are they currently enforcing federal prohibitions? Has anything changed? We all know that in 2013, Deputy Attorney General James Cole send the call memo. I'm saying, you know, the Justice Department is not going to enforce federal marijuana prohibition. And then Jeff Sessions basically rescinded it in January 2018. But has anything changed practically?
It's a really good question. No. I mean, from where we were then and where we are now, you're absolutely right.
Other than the rhetoric, right?
What's that?
I said other than the rhetoric.
It's other than the
like
rhetoric,
that, which,
right.
Which sends shudders to the corporations, investors, bankers, all that, that is kind of the big hang up still, I think, for those. They can't bank with, they don't have banking relationships and the money and the structure that's needed for the major rollouts, I guess, with the corporations getting involved.
In yeah, I mean, it's a really interesting, you're hitting on a number of really interesting things. I mean, first of all, the dynamic now is that, and you're absolutely right, there are challenges with banking. FinCEN, the financial institution, financial kind of cops, basically, at the Treasury Department, Financial Crimes Enforcement Network, they have a whole scheme of tagging marijuana transactions that they require banks to do in terms of suspicious activity reports. It's a big problem. There has been some movement on it recently. The banks have been accepting some marijuana businesses more and more, but there is still an unwieldy tax burden that is unusual, very unique for marijuana businesses, 280E, and it saddles them with a much larger tax bill than they would otherwise have. That said, these businesses like prohibition, and that is the sad fact. A lot of these, you know, as long as there is the status quo and they're not getting raided, right?
Just because also you make the money on the black market where you're not paying taxes that sale. Yeah.
Huh. But what we see in places like California is that, you know, with the industry coming in and cannabis becoming a commodity and the price going down, and we also see that a lot of the growers that risk their lives for, you know, cannabis, growing it illegally, are now out of business. So there is the other side of it, which is when it's regulated and taken over by the industry, and how that's affecting the small grower in a negative way.
Absolutely. That has been, I mean, that was a challenge that I faced, a perennial challenge I faced as a chief, you know, marijuana lobbyist on Capitol Hill for, you know, many years. I mean, it was a very difficult ethical challenge, and it was one that if I had to do over again, I would do it differently. I would give more credence to the growers in Northern California, and you know, and it, we were, you know, at the time, and you know,
were you part of the, what is it, Prop 64? That
yes.
legalized it in California. You were involved in the writing of
Colorado.
That?
I was not involved in. I was very loosely involved in the beginning of the negotiations around Prop 64. I was not involved in it.
Okay.
I was involved in the Colorado initiative,
which was the first. That was Washington, was correct?
That's correct.
Yeah.
That's right. Yeah.
That's something that. Sorry. That's something that I really see a lot, as far as just like what Bialetto was talking about, is these pioneers that created, if you even, you know, this industry that furthered the genetics of cannabis when they kind of shut the borders back in the 70s, and so it went indoor up in the Northwest, and the development of Northern Lights 5 and Williams Wonder and all these genetics that are kind of the underpinnings of the genetics that are happening now. These are the guys that created this whole industry and did it with the risk of losing everything.
Right.
And it's like now that major money and corporations are getting involved, these are the guys that are like bowing out or trying to find a way through it, you know, as far as, and I watch a lot of it. And what they say is like, you know what, guys, just now the pound of marijuana goes from, I don't know if this is the accurate number, but from 4,000 a pound on the wholesale market to now like $30 or $50 a pound, because there's so much surplus in Oregon, in California.
Yeah,
and so
Oregon,
they're saying, how do we compete with that? And they're, so they're trying to say, stress the quality.
Yeah.
Know your grower, pay for the quality of it and don't go to the what they call the mids or the poor quality. So, you know, it'll be interesting to see how all of this shakes out.
Absolutely.
With it being so new.
Absolutely. And I mean, you know, to springboard off of your point, but I think it's also important to, in addition to mentioning and considering the impact on the growers, the smaller growers, considering the impact on people of color who have been, are still sitting in prisons across the country for what are no longer, for what was then considered a crime and is no longer considered a crime.
Yeah.
And we, as a country, like we are, I believe that we have to address that. We have a moral imperative to address that. And the marijuana industry has a moral imperative to address it. And I know, you know, if any of my colleagues in the marijuana industry are here, you know, sorry guys, you know, I mean, but you have an obligation.
So there 100%. Is right now the Marijuana Justice Act that was introduced in the Senate by Cory Booker and endorsed by Bernie Sanders. Mm-hmm. And there is a part about, you know, the bill talks about restorative justice, right? Mm-hmm. And it's basically trying to restore justice in communities that have been disproportionately affected by marijuana arrests and convictions. We know that this is not going anywhere, like we mentioned before. Now it's with this administration right now. But what? Tell us a little bit about, you know, I know that in the district the arrest, you know, statistics for marijuana possession are, I think, 9-1, blacks versus whites, and whites smoke more weed than blacks. I don't know about the rest of the country. I know it's extremely unfair, but can you expand and tell us a little bit about what's going on? And does your work focuses also on restorative justice at all?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. I've spent a lot of time thinking about and talking about with colleagues restorative justice. I was not involved in Senator Booker's bill, although I've been involved in other legislation he has been a part of, marijuana legislation. That bill is pretty cool because it goes, I think, it takes the step that we need to take from a policy perspective in actually penalizing states that don't deal with their with the fact that they still have people
aspect.
With the racial aspect of the fact that they are absolutely. And I mean, to answer your question, no, it's everywhere. It's the same everywhere. And that's because we have a racist criminal justice. This is a racist country. We have a racist criminal justice system.
It's in the water that we swim
it
all
is,
the way through and through.
Yeah,
and you see
right.
it, and it's really interesting.
Yeah.
It's been there all along.
Oh, absolutely.
And now with technology, with every single person having a recording device connected to everybody else, now it's being brought out.
Yeah.
So now the question is, what are we going to do with it?
Yeah, that's right.
Are we going to
really
come to terms with it?
Yeah, that's right.
Are we going to continue to run away from it and deny it, which then just creates more problems? So we're, you know... And that right there is happening because of technology and the way that it is disrupting. That's happening with everything.
Yeah, it's pretty wild.
And so, it's like, what are we going to do about it? How are we going to handle this new way of communication and being connected to everybody?
It's really
interesting.
I think that what you're saying is that cannabis is out in the open and it's changing the culture with technology.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that having honest conversations about, you know, our use and changing the stereotype of the cannabis user from, you know, smoking your bong in the basement, watching TV with dreadlocks to, you know, whatever we want to call it, a productive member of society or whatever the hell. But we should have, you know, a me too, like, you know, I smoke and I love it kind of thing.
Well, I took a couple dabs before coming over here.
Perfect. There you go.
He too.
We definitely need to,
weed too.
Have a weed too, yeah.
Weed too.
100%. Rob and I talk with everyone about this in... We don't care, but we see a lot of prejudice and a lot of fear and a lot of...
That fear is a very good reason. You know, it's really interesting to be with Violetta because I grew up in the South. I grew up in Georgia. Mm-hmm. I was in Newt Gingrich's district, Cobb County.
Right?
So, you know, and back in the day, we were all geeky on the stats. He had... Mm-hmm. They spent more money per capita... for the police force in our county than any other county in the United States. So, I mean, it was essentially growing up into a police state in Cobb County, Georgia.
Mm-hmm.
So I grew up in the atmosphere of the drug war, which is very unique to the United States because when we go to Argentina, Uruguay, Brazil, you don't have that paranoia that's in the air for doing certain stuff. You know, it's really, really interesting. I see such a... a difference from growing up in that. You're going to have, even though now it is becoming more accepted and legal, but you still have the PTSD from the cops or the being illegal and the risk involved in choosing to do that. You know, it's really interesting to see the effects of the drug war that is so messed up and unjust.
Yeah.
And how many people, innocent, good people, it's totally destroyed.
Emphasis on war.
Oh, I mean, it's God. A war on people. 100%. Yeah. 100%.
I want to remind everyone that we're talking to Aaron Houston. He's the chief marijuana legalization lobbyist on Capitol Hill. He helped to write all the... He was. You still are in my world. Until somebody else is there doing it. And there is no one there right now. So he helped to write all current legislation that is related to marijuana. And he's here with us. I'm going to call you Marijuana Wizard or something like that.
Well, on my other podcast, I'm Hatchet Man.
Because, okay, there you go.
Yeah, because I'm both the DC guy, but I'm a regular on another podcast, Marijuana Today. I hope I'm able to say that here. Sorry.
Yeah, you can say anything. Right, no censorship whatsoever. Yeah, we're freeform.
Marijuana Today, if you want to hear a lot about marijuana. We were called the other day, I think, the NPR of marijuana. I was like, oh, that is cool.
Right. That is cool.
Yeah, I've always wanted to be like...
Terry Gross.
I know, yeah. I've always wanted to do the NPR
voice.
Yeah, I know. Thank you. Yeah, no, I really try.
You do have the voice.
But I'm also, you know, I'm the head coach at an axe throwing gym now too. That's probably the most interesting thing about me at this point.
Oh, so, wow.
Yeah, I'm an axe throwing instructor.
that's like Renaissance right there.
It's super cool. Oh, it's like cool. So good for getting rid of stress.
Oh, which is very important to have those techniques and methods.
Talk about getting rid of stress, right? We're talking about marijuana. Personally, for me, it's a great tool to get rid of stress. And we're so stressed out that that's another aspect that we haven't even touched upon, which is the power of plants.
Absolutely.
Oh,
you know?
Absolutely. Power of plants.
And it's
plants
ancient,
to the rescue.
They're ancient medicines.
We have, endogenous receptors that are there because it evolved in contact with THC.
Cannabidiol receptors, absolutely.
Exactly. Yep, I mean, goes back to show you how long this plant. And then you find the shaman in Peru up on the Andes had a satchel with cannabis seeds and all that. You know, it's like... We go way, way back with the plants. I mean, and this is not for this conversation, but, you know, Bialette and I met in 99 in Brazil in the Amazon.
I saw that. That's really cool.
With shamans and ayahuasca. So another one of those plant-human interactions that really shape the human and the viewpoint, the perspective of reality, life, death.
Absolutely.
And it's something that I think is one of the most important... parts of cannabis for me. There's other uses for each one, their own PTSD, anxiety, this and that, but it's like that whole ability to change the channel and go into another headspace and see it from a different perspective. You know, I just think that is very important, whatever it may be, whether it may be smoking a you know, a joint or even doing yoga, going for a run, turning on a song. We alter our consciousness, we alter our state all day, every day.
That's right.
Whether you're getting pissed off for a guy cutting you off in a car, or you're drinking your coffee in the morning, you have a headache and you take aspirin.
Try to get an adrenaline rush.
It's so funny, you know, it's like, because I grew up with the partnership for Drug-Free America. This is your brain. This is your brain on drugs.
And
it's like, I always said, it's such bullshit. What are you talking about? Everybody's sitting here taking their Ritalin and all the prescription meds and all that, and then you're going to sit down and say, you know, you should not smoke marijuana.
Yeah, America loves speed. You know, the rule about drugs basically
is because it makes you more productive.
Yeah, it makes you more productive. So America loves
coffee,
speed. We love
sugar,
Adderall. Yeah, we love cocaine.
Cigarettes, alcohol.
Yeah.
All that is okay.
You guys remember White Cross back in the day? Do you remember
White Cross? Was that like a thing?
Ephedrine, I think.
Yeah, at the gas station.
You could
go get that at the
gas
station.
Yeah, totally.
I tried. You know, I would always like experiment with that stuff.
Yeah.
And it's like one time was like that's fucked up. I'm already kind of
stuff.
Like high wired charging, so it's kind of the opposite
stuff,
that always attracted me to kind of kick back a little bit and chill.
Me too.
I think it's now a good time to take a short break, and we'll be right back.
Thank you. tuned in to Full Service Radio.
Full Service Radio.
Full Service.
Full Service. Full Service.
Full Service Radio.
All the music on this program is produced by Flash Frequency. DC-based producer, DJ, artist. Find him online at flashfrequency.bandcamp.com. We will be right back with the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience.
Guys, you're listening to the Dolcezza Sherbert Experience on Full Service Radio. We're at the Line Hotel, and our guest today is Aaron Houston. Aaron was the chief marijuana legislation lobbyist on Capitol Hill, and he helped to write all current legislation that is related to marijuana. Aaron, I want to hear more about you. Mm-hmm. Going back to, you know, the beginnings, and why did you get involved with marijuana lobbying, and why marijuana?
Yeah, well, I was, long story short, I was a very ambitious young man, a political nerd. I got involved in politics in high school, so I was a bit of a savant. And my mom was a politician, and you know, she kind of taught me the ropes. My grandfather was a politician as well, and so in Colorado. And so very early on, I was able to get plugged into different roles that were extremely serendipitous for the age I was at, and I had my first, you know, I was managing campaigns in you know, by the time I was in college, working on campaigns in high school, and I was you know, working part time, going to school, and also working for the Colorado State Senate. And that was my first foray, paid foray, into working in politics and government. And I was it's an interesting story. I was a Democratic operative, actually, on my, like, weekend time. But I was working for the Republican president of the Senate. I was his reading clerk. I was the guy who stood up there and read bills and called roll, counted votes and such. And they didn't know for a couple of years that I was a Democrat. And then at some point they were like, I heard this nasty rumor that you're a Democrat. And I was like, well, that is a nasty rumor. I'm not a Democrat anymore. You know, at some point I wanted to run for Congress from Colorado. And I had a plan. I was going to run for the state house, which is where I had started out working. I managed a couple campaigns. I worked on a gubernatorial campaign. I managed a U.S. congressional race. And that was all with the intention of getting myself set up with the skills to manage myself, my own campaign, my own political career. And I, in 2002, in the 2002 election cycle, I basically had a crisis of conscience and was just... You know, I couldn't do it anymore. How corrupt the political system is, and I'm not even talking about the illegal shit. You know, I mean, like, my last candidate actually got busted by the FBI for, like, bank fraud or something like that. I didn't know about it, of course, at the time. But, like, I'm talking about the legal stuff. You know, the freaking, like, PAC. I mean, it's, we have a system of legal graft in this country. Anyway,
seems to be getting worse and worse, and too, or at least not. Whether worse or worse, but reinforced.
It's in a
that is okay.
It's in a terminal state of decay.
We need to get money out of politics.
Yeah.
That's what we need to do. First guest, our Ben Cohen of Ben and Jerry's. You know, he's on a whole campaign to stampede. Sure. Yeah.
Citizens United is a big problem.
Yeah. No, it's a huge problem. Yeah. Well, I used to give a lot of money to politicians from our marijuana pack. Actually, I'm skipping ahead a little bit. Basically, I had this crisis of conscience in 2002. And I, by the way, had gamed the college system. So I didn't have my college degree. I don't have a college degree, nor I was able, though, to game the system at my college to get graduate courses to go through graduate school before I even got my undergrad. And so I was able to do like all of the coursework for a graduate degree. But I don't have paper for any of it, you know. I was taking care of my grandmother at the time with Alzheimer's. And so I was doing three different things in life, and it's pretty busy. So, you know, I didn't really have the option of like going to law school or something like that, you know. And, like, what am I gonna do? You know, I'm a pretty skilled political operator. And, you know, I decided I'd look and see if the ACLU or something like that, some like liberty oriented organization, had a role that I could fit into. And I came across the Marijuana Policy Project. And
which was what at the time?
And what year was this that you came across the...
So that was in 2003. Okay. Yeah, the very early 2003. And I started working for them in 2003. And basically, I was what my boss for a long time, my now shamed, and he's a horrible guy, but you can read stories about it if you want, going back in the Washington Post. I don't even want to give it ink here. But he used to call me, you know, the political hitman for the organization. Basically, my job was to go and cause trouble for candidates, for politicians who are not voting with us on marijuana. That was how I started out my marijuana grassroots organizing career, was going up to New Hampshire during the 2003-2004 presidential election cycle and causing a lot of trouble for John Edwards and for Howard Dean.
Oh, I remember those days. Jesus, rest in peace, all of them.
Oh yeah, I know.
And then you did you found the Students for Sensible Drug Policy?
Oh, I didn't found it. No. Although, you know, I was executive director for several years, and that was a great honor. It's an incredible network of students around the globe.
Tell us more about it. What did they do? Grassroots campaigns?
Yeah, in like 200 campuses around the world. I managed a staff of four or five people at different times.
And this was the during the primary campaign of Obama?
Well, actually, during the primary campaign of Obama, I was still at the Marijuana Policy Project. I was their chief lobbyist at that point. And I also, I was behind putting pressure on Obama to get... It's actually a really interesting story. I was like friends with a couple of people on his campaign staff who totally smoked weed, right? And at night, and Obama was not coming out in favor of marijuana. It was ridiculous too.
All and I especially needed him to with say, his past in Hawaii, and
dude, it was not cool. And so he had his fundraising office was in our building, and so I saw him all the time, and I also saw his staff, and that's how we got friendly. And then I was a guest on the Colbert Report that summer. And they thought it was like the bee's knees. They're just like, this is so cool. And we started, you know, they were like, can you smoke us up afterwards? Smoking them up. And I'm like, God, you know, at some point I was like, guys,
come on.
Like, what is the issue here? Like, Hillary has come out in favor. Like, why, what are you waiting for? And they're like, at some point one of these guys goes, you need to put the hurt on us. He's like, I'm telling you, I was in a staff meeting this morning. They're not going to change it unless you put some pressure on. I was like, I'll put some pressure on you guys. No problem.
Meaning from the MPP?
So what we did, this is a great story. I was like, no sweat, you know, but I want to be polite.
You started as a hitman.
So I was like, yeah, political.
You just killed.
Yeah, I was political. Like, I can do that. Yeah. Well, no, so I'm like trying to be polite because I don't want to alienate them. At the end of the day, I just want to show them that we have some power. I don't want to really mess them up. So I go to them and I say, hey, we're going to light up your phones. Okay, what number do you want my people to call? And they give me this number, okay? And we put it in this alert, send it out to California. I believe this was leading up to the California primary. So send it out to California, had a big list in California. And all of a sudden, I get this frantic call. We send it out, you know, hit send. get this frantic call from the Obama people, and they're like, they call my colleague Ben, who's like executing all this, and he's like, oh, they're pissed, man. And I'm like, what? He's like, well, they're calling the finance office. All of our people are calling so, you know, campaigns will have like their general like 800 number or whatever, you know, but they also have like their secret lines for dialing in and out to call for dollars for like super rich people, right? And we were lighting up one of those phone lines. we might have caused for their high level finance office. Huh. Oh, it's great. I mean, Villette is like is wincing a little bit, but I'm like, it was wonderful because the next
day you
got
attention. You get attention.
No, so the next day we sent somebody back. And
no, I love that you have the guts to do all the things. My face is like, I couldn't do this. Like, that's awesome.
No, thanks.
Yeah.
Thank you. Yeah. Yeah. I was just doing my job.
You know, I have a question, though. I want to go back to the very beginnings of why marijuana? Or is it because you were ahead?
Oh, that's a great question. Yeah, I was. I was a secret marijuana user, you know. And I was working in politics. And I was like, and believe this or not, guys. I mean, I must, like, speak to how naive I am at my core. Like, I really didn't know that like a lot of people used marijuana.
Yeah.
You know, I really, until I became a marijuana lobbyist, it was just not obvious to me. And it's funny because, you know, I'm from Colorado.
Yeah.
Much
more open and lenient.
Yeah.
Than that.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you know, in college, obviously it was pretty, like a lot of people used marijuana. But you know, once I got into the professional, political circles and working for the Senate, they didn't drug test us or anything. And I did smoke with some of my colleagues in the Senate occasionally, but it was like, I would have never conceived of telling a senator, for example, you know, I just went to, you know, I just got some great weed or whatever, you know, but that's probably the conversation that they are having now in the Colorado Senate.
Yeah. Because it's all legal. Dictated from what the, I guess the laws and the rules say, absolutely. Right? So nobody talked about it and they would deny it even if it, I guess, pressed. Well, now, I guess they are able, but still, it's still resistance, you know.
But you've said many times that one of the main issues is the gap issue. The gap in age that you see on Capitol Hill,
yes.
Right? And
yeah.
How
yeah.
The generational problem that we have to talk about this with senators or whomever, you know, that are in their 60s, 70s, or
so out of touch.
Yep.
Yeah, and you're not able to relate.
Yep.
To what it is to smoke nowadays.
Yeah, you're bringing up an interesting point, and I'll riff off that here by saying, so Capitol Hill is still, you know, as you know what you were just saying, Rob. I mean, at least at the federal level, it's not legal, and so it's still, you know, I used to hear a lot as a marijuana lobbyist, people be whispering to me, and you know. Congressmen and senators would whisper to me, but they were whispering it. It's now getting more out there, you know, but it was always, especially for people from states that have it legal.
Right.
But, you know, the challenge has been for me, you know, back in 2006 or so, or, you know, I mean, even several years ago, has been imagine, you know, as you're saying, you kind of have to be a translator of what people think to these senators and reps, and they are in a bubble. They really are. They're so, I mean, a lot of them, I'm sorry to say, a lot of them are really
marijuana is a getaway.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Yeah. Well, and a lot of them are not very smart. I mean, a lot of them are really not particularly clever.
That's kind of obvious.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I know.
There's definitely not a lot of intelligence.
Yeah.
On the other hand, rulemaking
right now.
Any Democrat running for anything is now, you know, supporting some sort of cannabis legalization.
Yeah, that's right. You have to. Yeah. I think it's a requirement that if you're running for president, you have to announce that you're putting a bill out there for marijuana.
Exactly. If you're a Republican,
from the left,
hand,
right? The Republicans are still reticent to come out.
The Freedom Caucus, is that the main issue that we have right now?
The Freedom Caucus just needs to get fucking high, and maybe they can relax a little bit from their like stringent ways, you know.
Some of those guys actually vote with us on like a states' rights basis. But
the libertarians.
Yeah. But they're, in my opinion, you know, most of those folks are not intellectually consistent. Many of them are not intellectually consistent around what they say about freedom and liberty and like how they actually vote. You know.
Of course.
Yeah. Well, I was going to say also, you know. Yeah. Imagine if you're that staffer, you know, in terms of the taboo, right, and talking about it. I had a guy from Georgia, okay, an elected member from Georgia. This guy's now a CNN congressman. CNN hired him as like a talking head. He's Republican. And this guy, one day I was lobbying him, and he goes, marijuana, is that the pill? Oh yeah.
You know, I swear it sounds like my I love my
Robbie.
Mom. Well, the first time
that
she found a bag of weed back in when I was in high school, she brought it to me and was like crying and weeping, and she's like, "Is this cocaine?" And I was like, "Mom, no."
So funny, man.
That sounds
that
like,
is
continue going,
that's
but
so
it's
funny.
The same thing, the out of touch.
Well, yeah, so yeah, I mean, and here's the thing, right? Imagine like, imagine being that staffer who does take those bong hits at night, right? But it's so dangerous if the, like, you don't want to be the one if the boss is
there's
like...
a job immediately.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, if the boss is like, what's a bong? You don't want to be the person being like...
Explain him.
Yeah, yeah. Or yeah. Like, what are these dabs? You know, I mean, sir, dabs are super concentrated marijuana.
That was me before we started the conversation.
Yeah.
That's when you bring in the brownies one day for the office party.
But the funny thing is it's a bipartisan issue, right?
Yeah.
I mean, the polls show that, you know, 64% of Americans are for legalization, yeah, and 51% of Republicans, right? Mm-hmm. So,
and but you know, when you say that, the polls say show overall support. We're in a time where it doesn't matter what the polls are saying. It seems like it's kind of like this ego trip right now more than ever. I mean, it always kind of, I guess, has been that, yeah, way to a certain extent, but now it's like there's basically one direction coming for one small group of people that's, mm-hmm, really hardcore right now.
Yeah.
I mean, just,
yeah,
not to go in a totally different direction, but
it's appropriate to
that,
yeah,
everything that's gone down in the last year and a half,
yeah,
and yet,
yep,
there's a 40% approval rating.
Yeah, yeah.
For everything that's gone down, there's still a 40% approval rating,
yeah,
for the folks, for the man in charge.
Yeah,
it just blows me away. Blows me away.
Yeah, and it's, you know, I mean, Trump, I've spent a lot of time thinking about this, and I was one of the few politicos that, who I know, who was calling a Trump victory early on. And it was, yeah, painful.
You and Michael Moore.
Yeah.
And it was painful, you guys, because, you know, my primary partner was like would get mad when I talked about it, you know, understandably, you know?
Yeah.
And so I was like, Jesus, I can't even talk about this.
Oh, we
stuff,
had that,
right?
Dynamic. I was your partner.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, it's not happening. And Rob was like, Rob was like, I feel it.
I feel it.
Gonna,
I
happen,
see it.
And
gonna
I
happen.
Could not, yeah, wrap my head around,
yeah,
it.
Yeah. It's really, it's, and I mean, we're not going to legalize marijuana at the federal level. I honestly...
Not during this administration, but...
I don't know that we're going to have another administration, to be honest with you. I mean, I think that our... I mean, I'm, you know, serious.
Wait. Did you just, like, pull, like, the apocalypse card kind of thing?
Yeah, I did. I mean, I think, you know, just yesterday...
Damn, I thought I was the only...
Yeah, no, man. I mean,
paranoia.
No, I mean, I've got kids. I want to, you know, those kids are going to survive whatever comes. You know, I'm going to make sure that they're okay. And we live in target number one here, you know, in D.C. So,
yeah,
I mean,
we had this conversation too.
Man, just yesterday, you know, Trump pulled out of the North Korea meeting. I mean, that is some really, really, really dangerous stuff.
Yeah.
And I was, you know, I feel maybe a little naive because I've been pretty on point in terms of predicting things. Like, I didn't really think that we were going to pull out of that.
Yeah.
You know, very, very
things
concerning.
Are really fucked up.
It's really
beyond,
fucked up, yeah.
But fucked up beyond what we even, I think, can imagine and grapple. And then,
yeah,
so fucked up.
Yeah.
And yet still at this point, there really is, at least on the mainstream channels, there's nobody talking about it.
Oh,
saying,
I know.
You know what, guys,
yeah,
this is beyond acceptable. We actually, yeah, like, crossed acceptable long time ago.
That's right.
And we're continuing to just go along with it. And it, yeah, it's, you know, it, I mean, it's scary to think about the,
yeah,
the consequences or the things that can come about from these decisions that are being made at that level.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's really,
yeah,
terrifying. Like you, yeah, said, in D.C. with children, it's,
yeah,
really messed up.
You know, we don't think about this in the modern age, you guys, but, like, even outside of, like, apocalyptic stuff around North Korea or World War III starting in Syria,
climate
or whatever,
change.
Climate change, whatever, like, I mean... We are so reliant on technology to live, like, all this stuff that surrounds us.
Dude,
electricity.
I mean, I all I talk about is, like, going back to the land.
Yeah,
and going back to where I grow my,
yep,
own food. And,
yeah,
I am on the, I don't want to go to the bush, but I want to be on the peripherals where I don't depend on if the grid goes down,
yep,
or whatever. You know, I can still basically eat and,
yep,
and not be overwhelmed at being in a inner city area.
Absolutely,
where you're,
man,
really dependent on everything, on technology.
That's,
and so,
right,
you're susceptible.
That's right. Like, we used to live in the same neighborhood, and, you know, in our, yep, neighborhood, we have, like, well, I'm counting maybe like 3 nodes for food or something like that.
Oh, so you moved away?
Right. Just up the street, actually.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, just really close.
That.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
No,
totally.
To stay on that point, you know what's kind of funny is the way that you and I met, where we were you were
parking.
Coming in on the eclipse, on the full
solar
eclipse.
That's right. That's right. Of course.
And and so it just kind of said, hey, you were with the girl. And
with my partner.
Yeah. And we were with our kids and we just talked about it, you know, and you were like blown away. You were moved by it. And it was like, and we kind of went on a deep tangent there.
Yeah, totally.
And then I said, man, we should get together and smoke and continue
which
this conversation. And that's how you were like, yeah, we still haven't, man. And that's when you were like, hey, by the way, you know, I kind of work in that whole industry. Yeah. And that's kind of goes back to the time where we met, which is really cool.
Yeah, totally.
Yeah.
So, you were talking about technology, and you work for the Ghost Group, which has a really cool name.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was a super cool name to work for.
You did. It was a private equity company that owns marijuana-related technology
companies. Weed Maps is what, they own Weed
So what
Maps.
The hell do they do? What is happening with marijuana and technology these days?
Well, it's like basically like a listing company. So like think about like Yelp for marijuana, right?
Okay.
So they have, you know, an online directory. They're having, you know, they are essentially protected under federal law by the Communications Decency Act, Section 215 of the, Communications Decency Act. And that has allowed them basically to put up this content, even when states aren't thrilled about it. You know, DC, I don't even know if Weed Maps lists dispensaries in DC. I know that they've had an issue in California. Obviously, I'm not with them anymore, so I don't know the details. But in California, they've had regulators coming after them saying, hey, you should be a licensed entity. And they've come back with, actually we're protected under 215 of the Communications Decency Act.
Huh.
That's what it is. So many things around, you know, creating an industry.
Yep. That's right. Yeah. That's right. It's tools. It's, you know, if there's a gold rush, the business to be in is picks and axes. You know,
definitely.
Yeah.
Talking about technology as well, we see what Rob calls or what is called, I don't know, the digitalization of marijuana with the vapes, right? The vaporizer beans. And when you vape, you don't smell and there's no smoke. And so the image of smoking has changed tremendously. Have you seen a change with the introduction of the vape in the cannabis culture?
All the pins everywhere.
Definitely. I mean, a lot more people use it, I think, because the pens are discreet. And, you know, I mean, you can just step outside of, you know, a fancy hotel like we're in right now and, you know, and vape. I mean, we're in DC, so frankly, you could probably go outside and smoke a joint and you'd be all right. You know, which is, by the way, awesome.
Oh, it's amazing. Yeah, it's such a freedom to have.
Yeah.
Again, from growing up with it being completely the opposite. Just to have that degree of freedom as a part of your life is so empowering.
Yeah, absolutely.
So relieving, too.
Yeah, totally.
The pity is that, you know, like in DC, although, you know, you can grow and you can gift, we still cannot tax or regulate, you know, the marijuana that the voters in D.C. legalized. So that is...
Yeah, the writer, whoever that guy was.
Andy Harris.
Andy Harris, put on that bill.
Yeah, and I had a client last year when I was trying to undo that last year. And I told my client at the time, you know, he works with Dr. Bronner's, and they're awesome people. Love working with them. Yeah. I told him at the time, like, this is very unlikely to happen. He didn't go into it, you know, Pollyannish, which is like, you know, we'll make this like a Hail Mary. And we actually almost got a committee vote. It was actually our allies who blocked us on the committee vote. I'll tell you what, guys, it's the allies as frequently as anything
there are
else.
No friends.
Yes. Yep.
Yeah. Wow. Yeah. You know, when the Initiative 71 was happening, I went to the office on Massachusetts and where Adam was at and got
Adam was my client.
Got the posters and all around the factory.
Yeah.
Posted them up everywhere for Initiative 71. It's like old school. I used to post The Emperor Wears No Clothes, that book
back
in the day from Jack Ayer, in college at Georgia Tech. I would photocopy like hundreds of different sheets, like the 10 facts of marijuana, and I would post them all over Tech's campus back in the day.
Hey, circling back to hair. All right, you mentioned hair, and I was starting to tell this story earlier. This is so funny. So obviously police departments all over the country have their different, what they think is marijuana is called. And in Rhode Island... we got this like document one time from the cops or like local drug task force. And it had this strain called Jack Hurrah. And like, as in like Harrah's Casino or whatever. And it took us a while to realize that it's Jack Harrah with a New England accent.
I swear, being into the whole growing and genetics, I remember when that came out. Yeah. And it was developed, I think, by Sensei Seed over in Amsterdam. And it was in honor of Jack Harrah.
Yeah.
And it made a lot of noise on the whole mm-hmm. weed scene with his variety. Sativa, yeah, super trichome, yep. crystally and... Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I bet you never had the super specialized Jack Harrah.
I didn't make that the northeastern version of Jack Harrah.
So, Aaron, we go to Uruguay a lot. Mm. My parents have a house there, and I'm from Argentina next door. So, Uruguay is the first country that legalized marijuana in the world.
Yeah.
How is that going? What do you know about Uruguay and that experiment?
You know, I know very little about it, but I haven't followed it as closely as I could have. I do know that one of the most recent bumps in the road that they have, and I don't know they have had, and I don't know if they have resolved this yet, was around the banking issue, because they are reliant on American banks, and so if they're reliant on American banks, they're not. This is, you know, if it's a pharmacy, for example, yeah. and that's where they're selling
where they're
it
available.
Out of.
Yeah,
yeah, and a pharmacy, you know, marijuana will be a tiny portion of their business, right? So they don't want to risk having their entire bank account shut down for their whole business
for dealing with the devil's weed.
Yeah, exactly. For just a few, maybe even, you know, volume marijuana sales, but like it would probably be just a fraction.
We would always hit up this guy on the beach that would dig holes in the beach for your beach chairs and say, "Hey, you got any cannabis?" And he would always bring back, and it was terrible quality. And yeah, we haven't ever had it, and then we have never tried it from the legal pharmacy. I think you have to be a resident anyway to go in to the pharmacy to purchase. So I wonder about the quality of the genetics down there.
Oh yeah, yeah, sure. Yeah, yeah.
So I'm such a the genetics thing and the quality of it. You know, coming from living out west in Portland, California. In DC, we still have a very unsophisticated weed culture. I think as far as the quality, people really don't know what good. I was listening to this guy. What dank is? Is very different.
What is dank?
Just like the genetics, like perfectly grown, perfectly dried, perfectly cured, in the immaculate headspace.
Rob is a master grower. He is.
Nice.
I have. I brought this gift. If you want it.
Oh man, that's beautiful. Thank you so much.
This variety here is called Mimosa.
Oh,
and this variety, Sacramento had the High Times Cannabis Cup, not this past weekend, but the weekend before. And this won third place in the hybrid flowers. This is a female, so this was cut off a mother. This is for you if you want
Thank
it.
Thank you, Rob. Thank
it's
you
not,
so
it
much.
Doesn't have roots. It's in water.
All right,
so
man.
If you kind of keep it there and... it should grow roots and you can put it in soil, but
wonderful. Thank you so much.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's a blessing.
You know, it's kind of like, it's really in anything, whether it's cannabis, whether it's coffee, whether it's gelato, there's levels and levels and levels. And there are very few people that really find their way to the top as far as like the immaculate, the dank, of gelato, the dank of coffee, the dank of cannabis.
Sure.
You know? And it's like, that's to me is like, that's the search.
Oh,
and
yeah.
That's what it's all about. Because
that's
it's
cool,
even
man.
At the chemical
nice.
Level, it's a totally different experience.
Mm-hmm.
If you go to 7-Eleven and get you a coffee, it's a totally different experience physiologically, taste, smell. The experience than if you go to like a Dolcetta and get like a fresh roasted, properly extracted coffee. And the same thing is if you get brick weed.
Totally.
It's broken down into CBNs and CBDs. And it's a totally different effect where if you have pristine, grown, dried, cured, handled
We
cannabis.
Should be selling it at the farmer's markets, right?
No, they do have those farmer's markets, I think, in California,
yeah,
right?
Yeah,
where
sure.
you go to a cannabis farmer's market and you
there
meet
you
the grower. Mm-hmm. And then you can have the discussions
We're
about the varieties.
We're in the wrong coast.
Damn it.
Man.
The East Coast
at least I have my own grower.
Or, you know, for being on the East Coast, NDC, it's pretty amazing that this happened. I remember being in Uruguay when the whole Initiative 71 was going down, and I didn't think it was going to happen. And when it did, I couldn't believe it, you know, that when we came back here.
So I give Adam a ton of credit.
Yeah.
I mean, and I got to tell you guys, like, you know, I Adam.
We want to have Adam on the show.
You should have him. Yeah, he's a character, man. He's great. I mean, he's a great guy. And I mean, he last year, like, we have different approaches sometimes, right? when he was a client, right? I was like, he's like, okay, you go to the Hill and you be the good guy, and I'm like,
and he goes to the Hill and smokes,
and he goes to the Hill and gets his ass arrested, and I was like, oh man, like, this is. And then I walk into these offices, and they're like, are you with that guy in that weed outside?
Has the red hat on it?
Yeah, exactly. But I got to give Adam a ton of credit for what he did with 71, and I was in the rooms. You guys, I can tell you, like, there were a bunch of national organizations. Marijuana organizations, unfortunately, that were trying to stop him from doing that.
And why?
Just because they thought it's like this
not
happens
the
a lot.
Approach, not the way.
It's like, yeah, right. Like, it's not the approach, it's not the way. Also, there's probably some amount of jealousy and credit taking.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, they thought it like look bad for the, you know, industry or whatever. And it's like, it's so arrogant to think
it
like
is.
You know, you
the
have like
within a
so
movement,
arrogant, isn't
so
it? Yeah,
counterproductive.
It's just remarkably arrogant. But Adam Eidinger.
And Eidinger.
Luckily, he. You know, he told him he's going to do it anyway. And, you know, and I got my company at the time to give him some money for it. And to their credit, the Drug Policy Alliance did step up once. Adam got it on the ballot, but none of these guys helped him get it on the ballot. You know?
Huh.
And, like, that's not cool.
Yeah, it is.
Not cool.
And then that's just everything is like that, you know?
Yeah.
It's like, unless you see it, whatever, being supported by the masses or see the actual financial opportunities, this and that, then it's people are very reluctant to get on board in the early stages. So, yeah, he has balls, man.
Oh, yeah.
And
the
thing that I always see about him is, like, he goes all the way.
Yeah.
And he doesn't
draw
back to it. He doesn't say, okay, we'll make concessions over here about this. He wants, you know, the government housing, which being they're not allowed to participate in that, the legal structure here in D.C. because they're in government housing, which
absolutely.
Is federal. So, and he doesn't back down.
Yep, it's great.
He does not back down, and it takes that.
Yep.
Because if you don't demand it, people are not handing out rights.
That's
anywhere.
Right.
If
yeah.
you don't, you can ask the brothers and the sisters. You can ask the queers, the gays. You know, no, they're not handing out rights.
Yeah.
If you don't fight for it without backing down, you're not going to get anything.
Yeah.
And that's for everything, whatever it is, you know?
I think at this stage where, you know, whatever rights, you know, people have achieved recently, we better be hanging on to them.
Yeah.
You know?
For our dear lives.
Tight.
For our dear
real
lives,
tight.
Because we're going back, man.
Yeah.
All
yeah,
those
we
rights that were won and just and take them for granted, man, they're trying to roll it back.
Yeah.
And they already have rolled it back in just simply the way that they speak.
Yeah.
Because the conversation and the rhetoric and the way that you speak, that already transmits and sets
absolutely.
Precedences. You know, it's
absolutely.
Like it's I mean, going back to the apocalyptic kind of thing, as far as like it's really interesting the moment in time that we're alive, right?
It really is.
There's
it's
a lot of stuff
moment.
Going on
yeah.
that's really hardcore and,
yeah.
and being rewritten down at the foundation, the bedrock level of it. And so it's, you know, so what does that mean? Be very, 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 very conscious and awake every second of the day and just to try to make the most aware decisions within all of this going down right now.
Yeah, I got to tell you, man. I mean, I'm shocked that, like, when I talk to people, it's funny because when I talk to people, like, you know, I'm a pretty prepared guy. Like, I always have a first aid kit in my bag, you know, in case somebody, you know, gets hurt on the sidewalk or whatever.
Wow.
You know,